Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2016. Lecture 5, delivered on January 26, 2016. The title of this lecture is Financial Statement Analysis.
Today, financial statement analysis. I'm going to begin with a little story, just a brief story about financial statements. Yeah. He could have been, but that was back way back in the time when chemicals were more tolerated in open society. Who the hell was that? What was he saying? I'm the star of the show, my show. No one takes the stage. You should know me by now. I'm a little off my game, though, because, I mean, anyway, where? Financial statement analysis. I make this a little more practical than some professors would. I'm going to show you something back in the day, we called them the screens. I'm going to show you some screens with stocks, and I'm going to teach you how to look at the numbers and for your own personal and professional purposes, just to start being able to look at things like financial statements, screens of stock prices and the information that's on them, and tell you how we use it, or at least back in the day, how we use this kind of information for making personal investment decisions, and also in your case, for making decisions about jobs that you're going to take, because a lot of you are going to be stepping out there into the career world here pretty darn quickly, and it helps for you to have some ways that you can look at a company before jumping on board with that company in terms of how healthy is it, what are my prospects in this company, and also during the interview, when you can talk about the company in a way that other people can't because you knew how to look at the screens and the financial statements, that can help you out a lot when you're doing this kind of, when you're getting ready for your jobs and all of that. But to start this off, the best way to start learning about financial analysis, which is what this is about, especially this week, financial analysis. The best way to start you off is just to open up some of the traditional resources that we have in the internet age. They're a little bit easier to access. Show you, all right, let's see what's here and what these numbers mean. So I'm going to use Yahoo Finance. Be a little careful with this. There is an underlying resource pool, and all these places like MSN's Finance, Yahoo's Finance, Google's Finance, they draw from that underlying resource pool. The problem is that can get a little technical, and getting into those resources can be a little challenging, although one I'm going to show you today that's absolutely necessary for you. Even here in college, you'll be able to get to access it and get some information for research papers and other courses. But for today, Yahoo Finance is good enough for us. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to just pull up a couple of stocks. We're going to look at numbers and do it the old school way from back in my day. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up a company that is fairly healthy and see what we have to play on. Let's try. You're all familiar with that company, right? What's that company? Huh? Yeah, well, that's Target. Well, actually, we pronounce it Target if you're upscale. Target. That is so Decatur. Target Corp. Have a look at some numbers on it. Okay. First thing that you're going to want to look at is this uptick It has had a nice little swing upward today. Now remember, the actual dollar amount is really irrelevant for investment purposes or for analysis purposes. What you care about is percentage changes. Because a dollar up on a stock that's $10 is a lot different from a dollar up on a stock that's $100. So look at that percentage change. It's up $1.52 for the day. That's an upstroke of 2.21%. That's a healthy day. But that doesn't mean that that's going to be what every day is like. It's going to go up and down. So the first thing that I would look at is, okay, are we having a good day or a bad day? Then the next thing that you would ask about is, well, how is this day compared to the market as a whole? Is the market as a whole having a good day? In this case, yes, it is. So this isn't anything spectacular, although Target is responding fairly nicely. And if I were to look, I could even look over a one-year period. Of course, we had a hurricane down market here in the last couple of weeks because the Fed started signaling that it's going to contract the money supply or claw back in all that liquidity it's been building over the last 7-8 years. Did I just have a stroke? Oh, there it is. Okay. When a screen changes that much, I worry. Okay. Yeah, it's lost some movement. Now, some what we used to call trend line analysis. And this is almost like talking about tea leaves and throwing bones and reading tarot cards, but it's still something that you might want to look at. See this right here? These peaks, you have what are called descending tops. Descending tops is something that is a concern always with any stock. And what you do is, if you print this out, draw a line through the trending tops. And then what you're looking for, old school, again, this is what the elves do. Elves are the technical analysts, and I was to some extent an elf. I look for the stock to test the neckline. If that stock keeps trying to come up to that trend line, but it can't break through it and stay on the other side of it, that's a kind of a sell signal. It's the kind of thing that I would be a little worried about. This target here is going down, and those tops just keep getting lower and lower on the trend line. It's trying to test that neckline, but it's not breaking it at all. That's a worry to me. Is that a sell signal? Is that scary? No, not in and of itself. I'd have to look at other things, but it bothers me. I would also look at the bottoms. In this case, I had a hard bottom here. See those downstrokes? And I've got a neckline there. See how it tested the downstroke neckline, but it didn't break that downstroke neckline? That's a good sign. So I'm getting a mixed message from these two. Hard to say, but it's something to look at. There are many things you have to look at. There's no one number that's going to tell you your answers. Okay, now, previous close right there. I have to look at this, 68.92. So it is stroking upward. It's had a good day from the close yesterday. Now, the opening was above the previous close. That means there was buying pressure in the off hours, so that there was some price pressure, demand pressure, so that when it opened, the price popped up just a little bit. That's a good sign. The whole market was a little bit more optimistic today. Now, bid and ask. The bid is what you're going to sell it for. The ask is what you're going to buy it for. The bid-ask spread here, That's a pretty wide spread on the bid and ask. They shouldn't be that far apart typically. And that would tend to mean that there's a lot of fighting both ways on this. The bargain hunters are buying stock, selling stock at these low prices to get out of it. But then on the other side, the pressure is for high purchase prices on it. Spreads more than a buck or two, maybe 50 cents a buck, that kind of bothers me a little bit, but there you go. Don't buy anything about this one-year target estimate. What's the estimate for 1 year? It's saying 82.50. That's some analyst's fart. You're going to be good enough that you can have your own estimate. Don't believe. If someone is really that good at projecting the future, he or she is not going to be working for a company called Yahoo, okay? Seriously. use your own judgment. Beta. Beta, I'm going to teach you about beta later. I like to teach things several times. Show it to you as just, here's something that's important to us, and then get to bother with the technical stuff later. Beta is a measure of non-diversifiable risk relative to the market portfolio. The market portfolio is our holy grail. The market portfolio would be every stock in the world weighted by its contribution to the world economy. Basically, that's a way of describing it. Beta measures the part of the risk of this stock that is unavoidable. This stock could be a lot riskier, but the part of the stock that you can't, the part of the risk that you can't get rid of, that would be in a well-diversified portfolio, is beta. In this case, 0.64 says that this is actually a low risk, lower risk stock. It is below the risk of the market portfolio. In other words, the volatility of the market is 100%. Target's non-diversifiable risk is 64% of that. That doesn't mean that the risk of the stock is 64%, because there's a lot of risk that you aren't going to get any reward for. You're stupid if you buy naked stocks. You buy stocks and put them into portfolios so that the diversifiable risk goes away. So in other words, what I'm saying, though, is that if you had Target in a well-diversified portfolio, the part of its risk that would still be there is 64% of the market risk. That means that this is essentially a lower risk stock. This would be more of a defensive stock. Right now, young man, you are a wild and crazy guy. You drive your motorcycle. You listen to Bruce Springsteen, Gotta Be Hungry. But someday you're going to not be such a risky person. See, if you take risk now, you can recover. That's why younger people tend to be somewhat more risk-taking. But once someday, 15 years from now, you're going to have a pot belly, you're going to be balding, and you're going to have a wife and five kids. You can't be that much of a risk-taker then. 40 years from now, you're going to be old, your kidneys will be failing, you will be babbling and drooling, and you'll wear a diaper. Then you cannot be a risk taker at all with your investments. You need certainty of income stream. Because if you take a hit, you don't have time to recover. Right now, you would probably be looking more at betas, maybe above 1.2, 1.4. As you get older, your portfolio, you're looking for less risk. So you would be moving toward 1, possibly below 1. So in other words, if I were to be maybe a 50-year-old, I would build a portfolio of betas around this one. The weighted average of them may be about 0.7, 0.8, maybe even lower than that. But this is a stock that would be... Well, actually, you know, you could get some stocks that have betas of 1.2, 1.3, throw in a couple of stocks that have betas of 0.6, 0.7, and balance out to about a portfolio beta of the market. In other words, you could replicate the market portfolio with some high-risk and low-risk stocks, as long as they were in good proportion so that you weren't tipping. That's why you have to watch your portfolio. You shouldn't be buying and selling stocks all the time, but you also have to watch out for betas that might be moving one way or the other, and you want to make sure that you keep that balance in your portfolio so that you have a beta where you want it. So that comes up with the next question. Madam, what is your beta? That's interesting. You know, I could ask you, what's your astrological sign? You could tell me that, right? You are, oh dear God. Okay. No, seriously. But you don't know what your beta is. And interestingly enough, in our world, when we're professionals, that's kind of one of the things that we might want to start thinking about. What is my beta? You, what is your beta? Well, take a stab at me now. I mean, you get to decide. point four. For some reason, I buy that with you, you know? But what's your beta? What would you say your beta is?
I'm going to go with eight.
Damn! No, there are no eight. Eight, those are the people who get on rocket ships without spacesuits on. Okay. We're good. I mean, an eight would be you going into some of the biker bars I know singing Justin Bieber songs. I mean, that's risk. A couple of high points, by the way. A beta of one would mean that the stock has a non-diversifiable risk of the market portfolio. In other words, 100% of the market portfolio's risk. Now remember, the stock itself might actually be a lot riskier, but the part of the risk for which you should expect a reward is one. That's why buying stocks naked, I invested in this stock, that's a very stupid thing to do. And that's also another interesting thing, too, is that these financial programs, they constantly bring these people on. Well, he had a return. This fund manager won the top award for having a return on his portfolio that he was managing of 30% last year. Well, you dumbass, that probably means he had a beta that was insane. I mean, there's no glory in getting a return that high if you're taking that much risk. Great. There are a lot of people who don't want to have a nosebleed watching their investments. But anyway, just walking around the room, what would you guess your beta is?
Right now, 0.5.
Man, that's defensive as hell. But here's an interesting thing. In financial planning, you probably, if you go take some courses in that, we've got a great financial planning program here. We actually call it wealth management now. That sounds so cool. But we find that when we talk with older investors, and a lot of times they'll have these, you know, they'll have a portfolio. We'll say, well, what kind of a risk person are you? And they'll say like point. They won't say in betas, but they'll be describing a conservative investment strategy. Their beta would probably, they're expecting it to be about 0.7, 0.8. We look at the portfolio and we find that they have betas above one. They just don't know that they're actually taking more risk than they think. Interestingly enough, on the other side, we talk with younger couples, younger men and women, couples, young families. Oh, what kind of a beta? Well, we're looking for a little more risk. And so they're describing betas 1.2, 1.5. We look at their portfolios, and they have extraordinarily defensive portfolios, 0.8, 0.7. So aligning what you think with what you're actually doing is kind of an important thing. Okay, I'm going to go through a couple of things here. Day's range. It's gone about $3, which in this case would be about 4%. It's had a little bit of volatility through the day. Remember, not all of that volatility matters to us, because if you're riding just pure volatility, you're riding a lot of risk that you're not going to get a reward for. You shouldn't expect it. Volume. That's pretty typical for a big company. Matter of fact, that's actually kind of light, I should say. Yeah, so it's average volume. Notice that this is actually a quiet day in the market right now. Market is just sitting there saying, what's next after hurricane last week and all that. Now, market cap. Market cap is the number of common shares outstanding times the price per share. The number of shares of this stock, company stock, that are outstanding times the price per share. Essentially, this is the equity value of the company, the market's assessment of the equity value. This is the assessment of millions of traders, billions and billions of dollars traded over the day. By the most powerful computers on Earth, by the most sophisticated investment minds on Earth, with a pile of idiots in there too. The assessment of the market is that Target's equity value is around $43 billion. And, well, so I've heard, well, I don't think that's right. Well, okay, you go stand up to the universe and scream, you're wrong. This is what the market says it is. And remember, I just described for you an ocean, rivers, vast bodies of investors and computers battling back and forth with buy and sell, supply, demand, risk assessment, analysis of the trends, the information. This is the best assessment there is out here. Target's earnings per share, in other words, net income divided by the number of shares outstanding, is negative right now. Hence, the price-to-earnings ratio is not applicable. It's negative. In other words, each shareholder's share of the loss per share is $1.11 for the latest reporting period. Is that scary? Well, Target went through a dramatic rollover. Do you remember a couple of years ago when the Target stores all got refurbished and revamped? They were kind of turned in. They got a store in most of them, now grocery store section. They changed everything around in their stores. They did a major modernization. They were criticized heavily in some sectors because obviously this is going to cost a huge amount of money to do this. And you're seeing the effect of it right there in that earnings per share. A lot of that is still there. I was not one of those who criticized Target because the other side of it are the retailers who never took that hit and just changed over their stores and modernized them. Can you think of some companies, some retailers that never changed their stores and now they're paying the price? They are suffering greatly because they did not take that hit to their earnings by revamping everything. I'll give you a couple of examples. Sears, JCPenney. They're basically almost dead. Interestingly enough, more modern versions that you might not think of, Abercrombie and Fitch. They are still Abercrombie and Fitch from 15 years ago, and they are losing their relevance. I went into an Abercrombie and Fitch with my daughter. It's so dark in there, I actually went in with a flashlight. She was so embarrassed. I said, Dad, will you put that down? And I say, ooh, everybody, ooh. Anyway, they asked me to leave. Screw them. Anyway, the dividend is $2.24 a share. So in other words, every share you own, you'll get a dividend of $2.24 every year for it. Now, the dividend yield is essentially, well, it is the dividend divided by the price. So it's like you're seeing, all right, I invest $70.44. I get $2.24 a year for that, so my annual return, like a passbook savings account it is 3.21%. It's just a sort of a way of telling you what your immediate gain is. Now remember that when you invest in a stock, there are two ways that you get money. You get money through the dividends, if they declare a dividend. You also get money through the capital gain. If the stock price goes up, you sell it at a higher price, you make money that way. Now remember that there is a trade-off though. For every dollar that the company gives its investors as dividends, that's a dollar that the company is not plowing back into its operations to make its stock price go up through greater value of the company. So you have to kind of make a decision in here. Do I want a higher dividend so I get more certainty in my income? Or do I want to take the risk of having the company just plow the money all back into operations and maybe the stock price will go up? No guarantee, it's a riskier strategy. So in other words, if you were an older investor more concerned about income, you'd probably be looking at bonds, which pay a coupon every 6 months, and stocks that have high dividend yields. So you've got a check in the mail all the time. You really don't hope for a big, huge pop in the stock price. You just want that income now. When you're older, that means you can buy something besides cat food for dinner. Okay, now, taking it and moving on to something else. Twitter. Seriously? I thought that was TWT. Oh, well. Wow. Twitter announced, was it yesterday or two, a couple of days ago, it was wiping out the top management. The CEO and several others at the top of Twitter in a big shakeup. So let's have a look at what Twitter looks like right now. Oh, ouch, ouch. That's what we call yeehaw, okay? Big, steep drop, descending tops. Had an interesting ascending bottom there until here, and it's testing the bottom. It's testing that trend line right there on the bottom. That's a stock that is a serious, serious investment challenge. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. TWTR. TWTR. Come on. There we go. The beta is not applicable here because the stock doesn't have enough time. We haven't had enough information to calculate a beta. Looking at the stock right now, we're having a pretty good up day, and Twitter is not doing too well on that up day. Bid and ask. Now, that is more like a bid and ask. See how tight the bid-ask range is on it compared to Target? Target, that was a wide bid-ask range. Not sure why, but there you go, okay? Now, the volume, look at the volume on that. There's a lot of pull back and forth. Those who believe in the stock, those who don't believe in the stock, fighting it out. So the volume on this one is a much more robust. Earnings per share, it's losing money. It's paying no dividend. It's plowing all of its money back into operations. So once this beta forms, my guess would be that this is going to be a fairly high-risk beta on the stock. Okay, now it's your turn. Give me a stock. Apple. Well, there's an innovative stock. Okay, before we start, what do you call the beta? What do you think the beta will be, high or low? The beta of Apple is almost the market. That's because it's a huge company, and it's essentially, if you have Apple in a very well-diversified portfolio, it will be just as risky as the market about. So your return to this stock in a well-diversified portfolio will be approximately the return if you own the whole market portfolio itself. Stocks like this are kind of desirable. If you want to match the market, you would probably just say, find me a bunch of stocks with betas right around one. And then you'd make a 30-stock portfolio that had about that risk. And there you'd have essentially a sort of a replica, a proxy for the market portfolio. Apple, again, see the bid-ask range here is fairly tight. That's what I would expect. 52-week range. What do you notice about the 52-week range on this? I want you to look. Use your eyes here. Madam, what do you see about the 52-week range? It goes from 92 to 134. What's today's price? Almost exactly $100. So is it near the bottom or the top of its range right now? It's 52-week range. Huh? It came from 92. It's $7 above its bottom. It's 34 bucks and change above its below its top. This is nearer to its bottom on its 52-week range than its top. Talk to me. What would you call that? Is that a buy or a sell signal? Is Apple going to go out of business?
No. You said that if it's like not bottoming out and it keeps like bouncing back higher, that'll be a buy then.
Probably here, because in this case, 52-week, its 52-week range is near the bottom of its 52-week range. What that tells an old analyst like me is that it's tested its bottom. It's still near there. So this is actually a stock that probably has more potential on the upside than it does on the downside. That's something that I would care about if I were looking at stocks of technology companies. This company is near the bottom of its range. It's not going to go out of business. It's not in bankruptcy. Hell, it owns half the universe. Google owns the other half of the universe. So probably that gives me a feeling that this is more of a buy kind of a stock. Looking at this, massive volume, way above its average volume. So that tells me that there's a lot of buying activity, there's a lot of trading activity going on. It's not translating into a huge upswing in the stock price itself, but that's okay. There's the bears and bulls are having an argument. Bears are selling, bulls are buying. Bulls are a little ahead. Stock is near the bottom of its range. The bulls probably are going to win, and the stock is going to be a good investment decision. Notice that that beta, like I said. Now, let's try another one. Let's try Google. My ass. Why is it showing that? Wait, Alphabet? Oh, what? To Alphabet? Boy, I've got to look at the investments more. $713 a share. Now, here's a term for you, round lot. When you buy stocks, you buy them in round lots. That's increments. That's multiples of 100. If you buy like two shares, that's an odd lot. You're going to pay a lot more for an odd lot than you are for a round lot on a per share basis. So you buy a round lot of that, it is going to cost you $71,304, okay? So you're going to go out and buy yourself a round lot today of Google? Oh, hell no, no. It is a very expensive stock. Does that mean that it's a very valuable stock? No. All that means that there aren't as many shares out there, so the per share value is just ridiculously high on it. Realistically, it's... You have to look at its numbers to see what's going on. Look at the beta. Again, a beta of around 1.0. These stocks like Apple and Google are beginning to show, behave like they are the market itself. Where the hell did I put my coffee? Anyway. These stocks are beginning to behave almost like they are the market. They are emulating. Apple and Google have essentially become so large over the past 10, 15 years that they're almost like they are reflections of the economy itself, of the global economy. That's kind of a scary thing when we antitrust laws have failed so greatly that we have companies, several, that look like this. Okay, notice that the average volume, interestingly enough, this stock has been quiet today. Google is having a very quiet day. P/E ratio. Now, price to earnings. You take the stock's price right now, divide it by the earnings per share. This is essentially telling us how much investors will pay for $1 of current earnings. In this case, investors right now are willing to pay $30 to claim $1 of current earnings. Another way of putting that would be to say investors think that $1 of equity earnings right now, earnings available to shareholders, is going to turn into at least $30 in the future in present value terms. Price earnings ratio is a kind of measure of risk. People are willing to pay $30 to claim $1 right now. That's actually a fairly robust risk position. Back a long time ago, we got scared when we saw P/E ratios of 10, 15, 20. These days, you don't even bat your eye at P/E ratios of 30, a hell, 100. God, in the day at the height of the Nikkei index, there were stocks with price earnings ratios of 10,000. I mean, so I might get a little excited about 30, but most investors these days would say, $30. Yeah, I'll pay $30 to claim $1 of earnings. Okay, more power to you. Okay. Someone see my damn coffee cup? I had coffee. I brought it in. I know I did. Then I got rattled by that weird guy. Okay, anyway. Dividend. What do you notice? Google, what dividend does Google pay?
Zero.
They're plowing all their money back into operations. Every penny at net income is being reinvested in the company. That creates the potential for growth, but it also, it's risky. I mean, who would you rather trust with $10? Yourself or Google?
Definitely Google.
Well, I'd buy a cheeseburger, you know? You see, because what they're saying is that they can do more with your money, and that is your money at the bottom line, the residual claim the shareholders have. They're saying, we can make more off that than you can. And to that, I respond, bitch, you're not buying me Chick-fil-A tonight, so I'll take that money myself. But, you know, that's just me. Here, call another one out for me. Okay. Berkshire, watch what happens. Does anyone, you know, that's Warren Buffett's company, Mr. Creepy of the entire universe. Okay, Berkshire Hathaway. Berkshire B, I think I want B. Ready? Nope. That's B. The beta is zero. You know what a beta of zero means? There's one security that has a beta of zero. Zero means that it is a risk-free security. The only thing that I would name off the top of my head that is a risk-free security is a short-term treasury bill, the risk-free rate. So a short-term treasury bill has a beta of zero. This thing has a beta of zero. It's riskless. So what kind of a return do you expect on that? Fairly sucky return. Let's go back. Let's try Berkshire Hathaway. Did I spell that wrong? Berkshire dash Hathaway. Huh. I don't get it. Why am I not getting what I want? Berkshire Hathaway. Something's wrong here. Hang on here. Common. There. There it is. There's your stock. Gonna buy a round lot of that? Yeah, that's a price, $189,640 and stupid cents. No. That is not a stock that you're going to ever have in your portfolio. If you do, please come out of your dream, wake up, and get back to work. Oh, whoa, that thing was up $2,600. Today. Now there's an upstroke on it. But notice, get that out of the way. God, I hate those drop downs. Okay. Notice that on a percentage basis, that's not anything spectacular for the day. Nothing impressive at all, really. That's a very, there you go. Let's get away from that. Name me something else.
General Motors.
GM. 29. Up. 1.44%. Okay, the beta. Tell me what you see. What's the beta? Say it.
Kind of risky.
Kind of risky. This is a riskier stock. It's an automotive company. It's taking chances, taking dares. It's taking chances. It came back from the dead, fighting its way in a rather brutally competitive market. If you remember from your economics classes, the automotive market is a monopolistic competition market. Competition is fierce in the market. extraordinary expenses thrown in on research and development, on advertising, in marketing in general, actually. So that this is a risky stock. And you notice that its 52-week range is actually 24 to 38 to 39. So it's about midway in its range right now, up or down, you know. You put this into a well-diversified portfolio. Notice the price-earnings ratio. The beta is telling us that it's a risky stock. The price-to-earnings ratio is telling us that it's there's some risk aspects of it that aren't there. You're paying only $10 for $1 of current earnings available to shareholders. So on that measure, on beta, pretty risky. On PE ratio, not as risky at all. Now let me move down. Earnings per share, that's fairly healthy. Its dividend per share, the dividend yield, that is actually a pretty darn high dividend yield. You couldn't get that on a savings account right now. In other words, if you put in, if you invest $29.65 over the next year, your yield on your investment is going to be, well, unless they back off their dividend, which most companies won't do, is going to be better than 4%, almost 5%. Hell, you can't beat that kind of a return. And if the stock price goes up, you got some gravy in the capital gain. So some investors, if I get a good feel for what the investor's personal investment goals are and profile, I might say, you know, this isn't bad stock, especially, yeah, it's got some risk in it, but you got to get that into a well-diversified portfolio, put it with some low beta stocks to smooth out, get that portfolio beta in a less risky position. Hell, this thing's going to pay you a decent dividend over. And here's something about companies and dividends. By the way, everything that I tell you here, this is the kind of stuff that I ask on the in-class exams, for you to explain to me these things that I talk about in the class. Textbooks don't do this kind of stuff, and that's why I have these in-class exams where you just write one sentence or two sentences explaining some concept as I've described to you. Now, follow me on this. Companies, there were companies I consulted for, and they had been around for a while, and they said, shareholders are bitching at us. They want a dividend. So we need to start doing a dividend. And the thing about a dividend is that it's like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. Once you start paying that dividend, you are stuck with it. If you don't pay that dividend after you've started paying it, the stock market will punish your butt. And also, worse than that, there's going to be an expectation that the dividend will get better over time. It will grow over time. Most companies, if I'll show you this in a subsequent lecture, you can see their dividend actually follows a mathematical growth rate. 2%, 5%, 8%. It follows a growth rate. So in other words, once you start paying a dividend, not only are you stuck paying that dividend, whether your company is doing well or not, because everyone's going to expect that dividend, there's also going to be an expectation in the market that that dividend will grow as a percent. The dividend yield will go up over time. So there you are. You're kind of stuck with this thing where you don't pay a dividend. You plow your money back into your operations. Your company is risky because investors are just hoping for capital gain. Your company is risky because you're putting money into projects that might win or lose. But then if you start paying that dividend, that's money that you don't have for your company anymore. You're just giving it to your shareholders. And also those shareholders are going to get awfully, awfully fussy with you if you don't pay that dividend sometime. And they're also going to start bitching at you if that dividend doesn't grow over time. So it's a real tough decision. Dividend policy is a world in itself. And I've been in meetings where we have slogged it out, fought over what kind of a dividend we would pay. Do we have to pay a dividend? If we do, what kind of dividend it is? Letting them know that once they're in that, they're stuck. The Hotel California is open 24 hours a day forever. They have to keep paying that dividend, and if they don't, they will be punished. severely by the market for it. Let me do JCPenney. Bargain. Lower price, higher risk. Yeah. Beta. Interestingly, the beta is actually pretty darn tame on JCPenney. The company is actually not a very risky company. It's struggled and it's suffered. Look at its earnings per share. Price to earnings ratio will be not applicable if the earnings are negative. It'll be an NA. No dividend being paid. Bid ask is just tight as a drum. Quiet day for the stock. Let's look at the 1 year. Steep sell-off there. Look at this. It broke an intermediate neckline. Now let's make a neckline off these. We're going to watch to see if JCPenney tests this neckline that's built right here, see how it handles that. Let's look at its bottoms. See how it, there was a neckline right there, and it tested that bottom. There was a neckline right there. It tested that bottom. That's actually a good sign to me. I mean, I'm not giving you any investment advice. I invest for myself, not for your sorry asses. But I'm seeing some interesting, not suckitude signs on this. It's testing necklines. It's tested a downstroking neck, the neckline on the bottoms, and it failed to break through that bottom. That's a sign that I like. It tested it, didn't have the heart to go through it, so we're going to see if it tests this neckline. It's going to try to test this neckline here next. See this right here? It's going to try to test that neckline. If it breaks through it and stays on the other side of it in two or three attempts, that to me would be a buy signal on JCPenney. Just to me, that would be a buy signal. Let me show you an interesting one. Monsanto. Monsanto is, of course, the evil of the universe, the GMOs company. It buys politicians like some people buy milk. It destroys scientists who say that its GMOs are evil, are dangerous and harmful. And Monsanto has essentially a stranglehold on many, many of the farms in the United States with its genetically modified crops. But it is also a company that is under direct siege from governments in other countries. European Union, for one, has had enough of Monsanto and its GMOs. Other countries are getting on board. United States is pretty much the last country on earth that's going to be defending Monsanto and preventing labeling of products for GMOs. Let's see how Monsanto is doing. Beta. Near the bottom of its range, price earnings ratio 23, earnings per share is almost $4, $2, 2.35% dividend yield. Beta is fairly high, high risk stock. Let's look at a 2 year on Monsanto. Steep sell off. Now look at this right here. This is called a bull rally, but it's a bull rally in a bear market. See how it dropped precipitously? And then it rallied on buying, probably fund managers protecting their investments by buying more to bring the stock price back up. But they couldn't stop it. Look at this steep drop off here and no recovery over the last couple of days to speak of. That, in my judgment, is a sign that this is, and it's confirmed, of course, obviously by the beta on that stock. This is a risky stock. Probably not something you would want to do unless you were willing to ride a very serious bull. Quiet day, though, for the stock, up marginally. Now, let me go back to Yahoo Finance directly. Dow is 30 huge companies, the largest companies on earth. In a weighted, balanced portfolio, it's an index. It says what is the top tier of companies in the world, how are they doing as far as their stock prices go, as an index. Up 1.78%. The Standard & Poor's 500 is the meat and potatoes, the monopolistic competition giants. You will probably work for one of these companies or a subsidiary, or your company will be dependent upon the S&P 500, some company or companies in the Standard & Poor's 500. They are monster companies, 500 of them. They are the pulse of the mid-cap and large-cap companies that aren't in the Dow. Not up as much. The NASDAQ are almost all small, higher risk, higher expected return companies. Some of them are so small that they're basically dead. Every company that I ever got listed was on the NASDAQ. No, I'm sorry, I did get one on the Amex, on the ECM, emerging companies market, but the NASDAQ is little companies. There are a couple of big, huge companies on the NASDAQ, but most of them are small companies. Notice something interesting. The largest, 1.78 up the day. The mid-caps, up 1.41%. The small caps, up 1.09%. Interesting inversion. Greater risk, greater expected return. The NASDAQ would be a greater risk portfolio, stocks in the NASDAQ. And yet, it had the weakest return. So the market's assessment of improvement is more tilted toward improvement of much larger companies. The benefit of whatever the market saw as positive was less the more the smaller the company size, just as an overall trend. So if I'm looking at companies, generally speaking, a portfolio of the S&P 500, and you can actually buy an index fund that marks the S&P 500. You would have had a 1.41% improvement on it today, which is kind of odd because these should be quieter companies, lower beta companies. And yet, interestingly enough, they had the best return for the day in trading. Next thing, sec.gov. A very long time ago, all companies that are public companies have to report to the U.S. government, to the Securities and Exchange Commission. They are required to do this by law. They report on a variety of forms. The typical public company, its two biggest forms are the 10-Qs and the 10-Ks. Quarterly statements of operations, the 10-Qs. Annual statements of operations, the 10-Ks. There are some other forms that you might want to know about, too. But I'm going to introduce you very quickly, and then we'll do more of this in the next one. Edgar Search Tools, company filings. When I was a consultant, one of the ways that I made money was by typing out these massive reports for companies. Now they won't let anyone but lawyers and accountants do it, so I was out of the business. But then I stayed in the business a little longer because the SEC started moving toward an electronic filing system where you would send data with these tags on it. They were like HTML tags. They were called SGML tags. And it would rebuild a form on the other end. Sounds like cake these days, but back in that time, back in the 80s, it was just like wonder. It was a wonder thing, and I made a lot of money because I was one of the original Edgar filing agents. Edgar is this electronic system. Now it's so sophisticated, and I'm not even allowed to touch the whole system anymore, so I got out of it. But let me get you Target. This is for this class, but this is also for other classes where they're going to have you write research papers about companies. Target. The hell? Where's the Target? I'm going to do it by the trading symbol. Target is TGT, is it? Target, yeah. Okay, now, see the Qs? Those are the quarterlies. Here's something called an 8K. Companies are required to file a form whenever there's something that is not recurring that happens. You're the president of Megacorp International. You die. We have to file a form, 8K. That's a non-recurring event. You don't keep dying. So you are the chief information officer of a huge corporation. You issue a press release about something new. That's a non-recurring event, so we have to file an 8K announcing that this happened. You are the chief financial officer of Microsoft. You are caught in flagrante delicto with a subordinate in the company, and it's in the New York Daily News. I happily file an 8K about that event because I didn't like you. Okay. One of the ways, it was bread and butter. I mean, I had these companies, these little companies. Some of them were legit, some of them were not legit. They would do this thing called pump and dump. There were times when the insiders could sell stock. They were allowed to under the rules of restricted stock. So what they would do is that they would issue press releases right before their windows opened, telling all these wonderful things that were going to happen, pumping the stock up. And then their window would open, they'd dump the stock that they were allowed to sell fast and make some money. So what I would do is I would just charge $50 to file on Edgar an 8K. And it was like a constant stream of income. I had maybe, in some cases, as many as 8 clients. Sure enough, it was just like clockwork. As soon, a few days before those windows for the insiders to sell some of their restricted stock, what we call Rule 144 stock, they'd issue press releases. We are on the verge of a breakthrough in our battery technology. We are on the verge of a breakthrough in flying people to other galaxies. Sure. And they'd file it. And I'd file they issue the press release. Matter of fact, in some cases, I was one using my press resources. I'd send out the press release, and I'd immediately file the 8K, and then I'd withdraw $50 from their account because I'd done this. Pump and dump was just part of the game. There are other forms, too. There are inside forms that show that insiders have bought stock or sold stock. But let me go down here real quick. And we'll do the rest of this on the next lecture, but here. This is amazing what they have done now with Edgar. Back in my time, it was just like an electronic filing system that sort of made what the document used to look like when you typed it out. But now it's got all of these interactive components that you can use. The 10K is prepared by the company. Inside it are audited financial statements, but there is a huge, vast ocean of information in there. It's so large that it will boggle your mind unless you know how to navigate the thing. And I'll tell you how to navigate in the next lecture, because it's a way when you've got a research paper or you're researching a company because you're about to have an interview with them, going to these 10Ks is an awesome way to get information that's right there. And companies are quite honest. They don't lie in general because it's, you're filing with the government. So, I mean, it's like you're seeing these companies being very honest, very glib. You also know that there are not a lot of investors or investment analysts that actually read the 10Ks. The good ones do. If you want to really do investment or you really want to do research, go to the 10K. Sometimes it's just amazing. There's a section of the 10K. This is the financials here. There's a section of the 8K called the Management Discussion and Analysis of Operations. They even mention it in the textbook. The MD&A, as we call it, is just like this. There's just honest as you. It's almost like you're saying that about your own company. They'll just tell you everything very honestly in the MD&A. Where they've been, where they're going, what the challenges are. You've heard of SWOT analysis. Anyway. Okay, financial statements. You can download this as an Excel spreadsheet. It has like some of these companies have like 20 tabs. You've got your income statement, your balance sheet, your statement of retained earnings, your statement of cash flows, all right there for you to look at. Right now, consolidated statement of operations. This is the income statement. You got 3 years of income statements. Right there. You can download it as an Excel sheet and make pretty graphs for your projects for it. It's always there, and this is for every public company has to do this. And these interactives are just amazing these days. But just really quickly, target. Growing, see how the revenue, just I'm going to give you a quickie overview, and then we'll dig in a little deeper in the next one, do a little math. But just overall, not spectacular growth in revenue. Now, cost of sales has been growing too, so what we would be interested in is, interestingly enough, they don't put a line in here that I like. You take sales minus cost of sales, and you get something called gross income. It's essentially what's left after you pay your wholesale prices, retail minus wholesale. So I like that gross line. I'll just add a line to an Excel sheet so I can calculate it. In this case, I would be... My interest would be, well, it looks like the growth of wholesale, what they're buying things for, is in line with retail. So it doesn't look like there's anything going way out of whack there. Going down a little bit, I can look at operating income. Earnings before interest and taxes is called operating income. That's after they pay all their bills. That worries me a little bit. See how operating income has been declining on target? Hard to say. Their net interest expense. Looks like they had some interest they were paying pretty heavily, and now they've backed off that. That's a good sign, because you see, if the interest expense is bigger than how much money you have to pay the interest, you're in default. The closer you are, the scarier the company gets. Okay? And we'll talk a little more about that. But now, net earnings. Kind of worries me here. Their net earnings has really shaved off seriously. I mean, that's one. Now, let me go over here to the consolidated financial. 2 years, you'll get your balance sheets. Their cash position has gotten much stronger. Why? I don't know. On the one hand, that's a good sign, liquidity. But on the other hand, companies that have a lot of cash means they're not investing that cash. So my question would be, why are they accumulating that cash? Are they looking to take something over? I don't know. That kind of makes me ask a few questions. I mean, going on down, look at the total assets. That is scary. Their total assets have slid. Now, remember, total assets are liabilities plus owner's equity. Let's see where this was coming from. Total liabilities. Current. Nope. That's equity. See how the total liabilities, current liabilities plus long-term liabilities, both of those have stayed pretty stable. And their assets are going down, total assets, that means owner's equity is shaving. Oh, hell. Look at that. See it? Oops. Didn't mean to do that. Oh, well. Their total shareholders' equity slid. That is not a good sign. That is a bad sign. See, their total assets fell. Now, total assets are liabilities plus owner's equity. Now, if that total assets fell, but the total liabilities fell, that I'm not so worried about. They're just shaving off some of their debt exposure. But in this case, total assets fell because owner's equity fell. And unless they can show me some reason why a whole bunch of the stock outstanding just vanished into thin air, that means that this company's shareholders are in a worse position at the end of fiscal 15 than they were at the end of fiscal 14. That is what an investment analyst would do. You're seeing exactly what I would do, and I was a pro at this. This is the stuff that kind of scares me when I look at it. At this point, when I see this, my immediate, never mind the stock and all that kind of stuff, right now, my basic reaction to this stock is FTS. Fancy that scenario. I'm not going to buy this stock. I see too many problems on the financial statements. I see a scary situation. It might be a great investment, but you see, what's great for you is not great for me. Personally, I don't like scary things. You do. See, one of the things that I do when I'm not a professor is I hunt ghosts. I actually do. So here's the thing. You open a house, and the house says, go out! You're going to go in, and you'll become one of those meat grinding things in one of those slasher movies. Me, I say, I will see you later, no problem, I'm gone. That's all I have for you today, I thank you.